Hi, family. It's Monday. And wow, this next guest, Rob, is very personal, bro.
Big heavy hitters, boy.
Yeah, I got a heavy hitter today. Heavy
billionaires hitter. Now.
A young lady that I watched grow up, man, and just you saw it in her. She's a little tiger.
Yeah, can't call her directly no more. Got to call her assistant now.
You got to go to a little levels now. It's levels for all this thing, man. You got to get vetted out before you get with her. But hey, she's a little tiger. Went on to Michigan State and now has gotten her doctoral degree. We call her Dr. Patrice Johnson. Is on the show. How you doing, Doc?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Well, we so honored. We had to, like, when I saw that post about your next move, this move you just made, mm-hmm. I'm like, we got to get her on. You just moving. Next, you're gonna be over some big department. You're gonna be running for senator, or you're gonna be, you know, who knows what's next? I don't know.
We don't know. It just kind of happens. You just follow the path and make it work.
So, Vice President, Center for Policy Analysis and Research in the Leadership Institute.
That's a long title.
That's a long title. That's a lot of work.
Yeah. Come with a lot of commas, don't it?
Yeah. Yeah. She already had the bag, Rob.
Right.
I got to take care of my mama. You know, she want to eat nice and have all these luxury things. So,
Yeah. So, tell us about this organization, and I believe it's under the Congressional Black Caucus, right?
Yes. So, the Congressional Black Caucus Foundation supports the CBC members, right? So, it's an arm of the CBC. It's founded 50 years ago, right alongside the caucus, and essentially, it's the the partisan section of the CBC, and it's a nonprofit. It does the policy work of the CBC. It liaisons between the CBC and the White House. A lot of event-driven work. But the mission is to really support the global Black community and try to eliminate barriers for the global Black community. And I say global because my role essentially is not just to support Black folks here in the on a national level, but on an international level.
Oh, wow. Wow. Really?
See, yeah. Is there a reason why you're wearing pearls?
No, I just even as a Muskegon Heights councilwoman, I would always wear my pearls. I remember Daryl Page when he was the mayor one time. We were doing a city cleanup and I had on my pearls. He was like, "Why you got on pearls when we cleaning up?" But I always wear my pearls.
Oh, so you ain't part of the Divine Nine or whatever they call it?
No, I am not. I'm not. I'm divinely my own.
So, Patrice, you're going to be doing a lot of traveling then, I guess, with this position.
Yes, I'm excited because they've given me the ability to choose the five countries that we're getting ready to launch into with the Leadership Institute. So it's a lot to it's a lot to start building. I'm in a position to build some things.
Wow. Is this a new department?
Well, it's not new. It's always been the programmatic arm of the CBC, but they're launching into this new direction where they're expanding the Leadership Institute and really beginning to define what the research arm of the CBC looks like, especially right now, because as you can see, the social political climate of our time is just, it's a challenge. So I felt like, you know, it was the perfect season for me to make that transition to DC.
Man, how long you been at the organization that you're at right now?
Boys Hope, Girls Hope. I was there for 4 years. I left. That was, I left Muskegon Heights right after my term ended on council, and came to Detroit. Really love Detroit. Detroit is my second home. And we were able to, Boys Hope, Girls Hope, we launched 21st Century Urban Boarding Program. So I just wrapped up that project, maybe 3 or 4 months ago, where the girls, we have a girls home, particularly for girls of color, to develop their leadership skills. It's a 24/7 house where the girls live, reside there. And we gutted it. It's in the Green Acres community off of Livernois 8 Mile. Gutted the house, but built an art therapy room, a dance studio for the girls, culinary arts lab. I mean, everything you can think of was in that house, and it represents what I believe those girls should feel. That was my baby here in Detroit. You know, I was working on that for the last three to four years, and then got the call about DC, and I felt like it was appropriate time.
Wow, that's major. So let me guess. I know Africa is going to be at least two of those five countries. I know one of them countries got to be in Africa. I didn't know you.
Absolutely, without question.
Have you made the decision of which ones yet, or are you just sorting it out?
I have not. You know, my first, you know, next month we're doing the Sojourner Truth series, which is to inspire Black women to engage in the electoral process and elections and run for office. So that's the first thing on the agenda. And then we're doing an Emerging Leader Summit that's going to take place in June, July. And then you got the actual annual legislative conference, which is happening in September. And so I have a major role in setting up the national town hall and working with some Congress members on what that looks like. So it's just, you know, day one was like, boom, 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 boom. And you want to keep a pulse on what's important to the Black community as a whole, because we have to start doing some research and disseminating that research to the people. And so, you know, choosing what you focus on right now, you've got some voter suppression issues that just started popping up in Texas and then also in Georgia. So it's a lot. It's a lot at stake. It's a lot to work toward.
Wow. What was your major at Michigan State?
Social relations and policy.
So this is it.
This is it. I know.
Oh my God. Wow. Wow. You didn't get lost in the shuffle and you remember why you started.
Yeah.
That is so special. I got to put this, your mom made a comment. Proud mama. I know she's proud of you. Muskegon Heights is proud of you. Philadelphia is proud of you.
Yeah. I'm going back to the East Coast.
Back to the East Coast. Man, that is so. When do you go to DC? Because right now you're in Detroit.
Yeah, so I've already started the work, but again, they're being flexible with when I can leave because of COVID. So everybody's still working remote right now. I'm almost certain I'm going to have to be in DC for the conference. It's going to be taped in June or July, but I think it airs sometime in August. So I'm flexible. And of course, I still have this house. So this is, I'm actually sitting on my mother's side of the house. I'm trying to enjoy this house that I just bought in Detroit for a little bit.
Exactly. Oh, wow. Well, how much of influence do you believe that your research will have on policies that's going to be pushed by the Congressional Black Caucus?
Well, you know, I hope that it's going to have a significant impact. And again, it has to be, there's a couple of layers with the research. One, you want research that's going to be directly community related. Then you got research that's going to come from the congressional offices where they're going to pinpoint what they want research to be done. Then you got funders who are going to say, this is what we want you to look at, right? So I'm still building out what that's going to look like, but I'm really hoping that that will have some impact on the policy on a federal scale. I just wrote, and it was just published maybe a week ago, 2 weeks ago. It was all a dream, a message to Joe Biden about education. Mm-hmm. And that article was actually about my dissertation, which focused on Muskegon Heights Public Schools and the emergency financial management crisis, which is what I call it. And I basically essentially told President Biden, you need to center students and communities and schools. And that's how you present equitable education. So I'm hoping that pieces like that will now have a larger platform. It was published by the Michigan Chronicle, but you know, I'm hoping that that work can reach federal levels and get people to start thinking about equitable opportunities for the Black community.
Now, what was your doctoral in?
So my doctorate is in education, but the study was called The Color of Emergency. And essentially, I investigated the ways in which emergency financial management impacted five Black, predominantly Black school districts in the state of Michigan. And you all know what those school districts were: Detroit, Muskegon Heights, Benton Harbor, Saginaw. So those predominantly African-American school districts all were appointed emergency financial managers in the scale of about 5 years or so. And some of them, including our very own alma mater, are still in millions and millions of dollars of debt, still has some type of control. And what I found is that, you know, that process undermined the cultural and social realities of those districts. And we can attest to the fact that the cultural value of Muskegon Heights really supported academic excellence. But when you got an emergency financial manager who doesn't value culture and who is really just technocratic, he essentially makes decisions that undermine the legacy of school districts like ours. And that wasn't just happening for us. It was happening to four other school districts in the state. Some school districts fared better because, I mean, in Detroit, they had a plethora of other resources where they were able to get a bailout. We didn't get a bailout. We're still paying $44 million in debt right now that we're obligated to pay over the next 20 years. So that's another story. But yeah.
So what do you see yourself doing in the next 10 years?
You know, I mean, I just started this. So I'm excited about this work. You know, I just, at this point, I have two values. The first value is to create sustainable change that's going to outlast myself. I think I did that with Boys Hope, Girls Hope. I hope that I'll do that here with CBC. And then my second value is the lifting as we climb. I'm hoping that there's someone else outside of me. I used to think it would be Jocelyn. I'm going to shout her out in Tuskegee. I really wanted her to run for council once I was done. So, right. So that's the goal. Those are the two values. And so whatever I'm doing, they align with those values.
Wow. Got a lot of comments.
PA, you notice there's a confidence about Dr. Patrice Johnson.
She got some swag.
You see that? Yeah. I mean, it's like boom.
She was a boss when she was early, when she was a teenager. She was a boss.
I don't want to call it that. I'm gonna try to use a big word. It's confidence.
Confidence. All that. Swag, all that. She got it from her mom. She got it. It's a lifestyle.
She don't know what those words mean anymore, PA.
She knows that, man. Don't let that fool you now.
Don't let the doctor in front of her name fool me.
Matter of fact, Patrice, I noticed you didn't even put doctor down there when you typed in your title.
Well, you know, I'm with family, you know.
All right. So, you know, have you wrote a book? Have you written any other books since your first book?
No, I have two. I do have two books out. The last one was Kingdom Perseverance that I wrote right before I left Muskegon to come to Detroit. And I've been writing more so opinion pieces and getting those published. You know, it was all a dream with you. And when you say that title, you have to say it in the way Biggie would say it. It was all a dream.
All a dream.
So that one's doing pretty well. And then the other piece I wrote last year that is my favorite is called Dear Charles, Black Women Change the World. So I've been writing some op-ed pieces that I've been blessed to have published in some, you know, local spaces here in Detroit. And hopefully I'll start writing a larger book. I really wanted to turn my dissertation into a book, but that's probably a ways off.
Okay. Wow. We got some online comments and questions. Treasure X, Treasure Crenshaw said, how do you feel about HR 40? I don't know what HR 40 is, but maybe.
I think she's referring to the Voting Rights Act. Is that what she's referring to?
I hope so.
Maybe. So, yeah. So it was voted, they voted against it probably a couple of months ago. So what happened was they basically gutted the original Voting Rights Act, right? And this is where we talk about voter suppression and all of the tactics that you see, which that's why I'm mentioning what's happening in Texas right now and Georgia. And I think it's basically, I always argue that white supremacy has a response to Black excellence, right? That insecurity just pops up. So when you see Stacey Abrams and not just her, but the other groundswell of Black women who turned Georgia blue, immediately the response was, uh-oh, we got to start doing these other policy-oriented things to suppress the vote is what I perceive it to be. So you see, they started talking about in Georgia not doing voting on Sundays and all this other type of stuff when you got a high population of Black folks who go to church and churches operate these holes to the polls things on Sundays. You know, so things to discourage or to disenfranchise Black voting. But essentially, the goal is to get those pieces that were instituted in the Voting Rights Act back in place. And I think that right now, Congress needs to do that immediately. You know, I think the Democrats play, sometimes they play softball. The Republicans do not. They don't care. They're cutthroat. And I think the Democrats sometimes need to get a little bit of that edge, because if I was them, I would have did that on the first day. I told President Biden in my mind, you got like 24 hours to forgive these student loans. You know, so he had 24 hours. He was on the clock. You know, you on the clock. And so I think that that's what she's referring to. And it's supposed to be named after John Lewis. And they're supposed to restore the fullness of the act.
Okay, that's good. That's good.
Are we still having to Congress? Is it Congress or the Senate still having to vote on whether blacks can vote still for 50 years or something like that? We still in that?
You know, I don't know if that's the exact way that it's worded, but I love the way you put it, because essentially that's what we're seeing. People do not have, we're still fighting for the right to vote, because you've got people who will manipulate policy and essentially suppress the vote. I heard a young lady say the other day on Twitter that Texas is not really red, it's suppressed. So you think about all of these areas, you got Houston, you've got Dallas, it's a similar story of Georgia, where you saw on election night, those votes that were coming in late were predominantly African-American cities, Detroit, Philly, you know, that came in and it was like, boom, just flipped the state completely, right? Where you get areas like Dallas and Houston with high population of black folks. And I think the question becomes, it's not necessarily that we don't want to vote, but you've got some tools of suppression that are happening in those spaces.
So congratulations on your new position. I know you got a lot of work to do.
I do.
I don't know if y'all dealing with reparations over there. I don't know how the Congressional Black Caucus feel about that. Well, I know some of the members feel definitely want it. I don't know how you feel about the visa waiver program that have left all of the African countries off that list.
Yeah.
And I hope your office look at that. I think, to me, I just think it's just wrong that people from England can just hop on a plane and come here. You know, while our folks, our ancestors, or our cousins, who, you know, part of our DNA, it's like hitting a lottery for them to come here.
Yeah. And that's facts.
Seems unfair. And you was in South Africa. It's developed.
Yeah.
You know,
it's beautiful,
right? But those citizens, those black citizens, just can't come here. You know, but while somebody in Germany can hop on a plane and with some vetting and come here, it just seems so unfair.
Mm-hmm.
Before we go, can you give some tips to some of the young girls who might be watching, young kids who look up to you? You know, a lot of them might not know your story, but, you know, your mom did a heck of a job raising you.
Yeah. And I know she would say that she had help, you know, T.T. Kim, the former mayor of Muskegon Heights, and her husband, I call him Uncle Andy. They were my next door neighbors. And I think the only reason why I ran for council the first time was because I saw Kim doing it. You know, she was down the street and she had me working in her office, and Uncle Andy was taking me to Urban League meetings when we had Urban League in Muskegon. In fact, I think you did a session, because before they closed Urban League, I was heartbroken.
Right.
But I was involved in the Urban League for a long time. So, I don't know. I would just say cast a vision and go after it. Be relentless in your vision. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, you can't see the world as small. You've got to see it as your oyster, and you got to go after it, you know? And then you got to bob and weave. I had to bob and weave with some situations. And then you just got to shake it off and find another way.
Oh, Shaq Anthony said, man, this is history. Thanks, PA and Big Rob, for making this priority and capturing this moment. Aww. Real history right here. Right. We have a big story we haven't talked about on Facebook, but we felt like your story was more important first.
Aww.
Than share ours later. And ours is pretty significant. It's our biggest move ever. But we wanted to get you on first because we're so proud of you.
Well, thank you. I want to hear about the biggest move ever, too.
I'm going to hit you up after we get, because it's major. It's major. We're probably going to announce it in maybe 15, 30 minutes after we're done with you, but it is major. Yesterday, we celebrated 19 years in the community. Today, we made a huge move, and we're going to hit you up about it. But anything you want to share to the community? You got a lot of love coming online too.
I'm really grateful. I saw, you know, I didn't expect, because I posted this yesterday and I was like, man, I didn't expect it to be like so but mostly it's people from Muskegon Heights who I love me and I appreciate my hometown and my city, and I you know, I still pay property taxes in Muskegon Heights. Okay.
Oh.
I'm still a resident. Okay, I pay taxes in Detroit and Muskegon Heights.
I feel you on that one.
And then finna start paying them in Washington D.C. too. So you know they had to give her a lot of commas.
But it's this is good. I expect to see a lot of great things from you when it's all said and done. And go back and look at systematic change, because you make this report to Congressional Black Caucus and they take it, you know, and they fight for these things in the House and in the Senate and just voted on. So I'm looking forward to seeing this. We know we got us a real one there, Rob.
Yeah. She knows she black.
This is the last question I'm asking for Peace for Miko. Give me your top five rappers, dead or alive.
Ooh, ooh.
Who the boss chick listen to?
Number one is Jay-Z.
All right.
I love Jay-Z. Gosh, number two is Eminem.
Because you're in Detroit. Okay.
And I'm tell you, the one that I'm listening to right now, who probably is not my top five, but he's got a song that I play over and over again. Big Sean.
Okay.
I can't.
That's two out of Detroit. All right.
Man, and the last, what is that? Three, man. Okay. So, I mean, I feel like you get stoned if you don't say Biggie or Pop. Big Rob just said I was black. I don't want to lose my black card by not in the last two.
Or your East Coast or your West Coast card. All right, Patrice, I'm gonna let you get back to work. Thank you
for
responding. So proud of you, sweetie. Okay,
thank you. Y'all take care.
All right, take care. All right, back to more music.